Hey, you're listening to the Canadian Agent Missional Podcast, and this is episode 99. Today, we're going to be talking about Christian higher education. How has it formed us? And is it in touch with the local church and the world? Let's do this. Hey, welcome back to this conversation. Today, we got a good topic that we are unpacking. It's something that we've been wanting to talk about for a while, and it's on the topic of Christian higher education. Now, just as a, preface, all four of us have been to seminary, and we have also, three out of the four of us are currently still in some kind of education and continuing to learn and grow in that way. But we want to have a conversation about what have been our experiences, what are our reflections, where are things now, what have we been observing, and also, are we in touch with what's been happening in the world, especially with Christian higher education? So, as always, around the table, we have Bernard, Xenia, and Shu. How's it going?
Hey.
Hello.
Yo.
Hey, it's good to be back together, recording together, and this is a pretty big topic for us, and it's been one that we've been wanting to talk about for a little while. And so I think we're going to start it off with sharing a little bit about our experiences with Christian higher ed, and I'll go first. I think for me, looking back on it, seminary was formative in a number of different ways. I think I, in part, learned how to become an adult at seminary, yes, and a very refining time. I saw a lot of parts of myself kind of been revealed and needing to reckon with.
Yeah, I don't see a John Knapp anymore.
Where's the John Knapp? Yeah. Where's that sleeping?
Yeah.
I know all my seminary professors are listening to this episode, and I apologize. I'm sorry, I fell asleep in all of your classes, but I really had a great time. It was formative. It was learning. It was good. And, I learned by osmosis too, as my head rested on that textbook and just absorbed everything in there. But I think for me, there was the formative side of maturing in my own walk with Jesus. And there was also this sense of I'm being prepared for ministry. Now, I think looking back on that, I mean, that was over 15 years ago, that as I reflect, I feel that there's so many things that I learned in seminary, and it was good. And I was glad that I had that opportunity. And I'm glad that we also had the chance to learn how to learn, different ways in which to engage and study and research. But at the same time, I think when I got into ministry, I thought back and was thinking, am I really prepared for this? Is what I learned, all the ways to preach, all the ways to build community, did it actually translate into a church setting? And in some ways it did, and some ways it somewhat provided a good starting point. And then in other ways, I felt like, oh, wow, the world is much more complicated and church is much more messier than I thought it was going to be. And it wasn't just an easy way to just apply everything I learned. And so I think for me, thinking about that is like, oh, okay, seminary was good. And I very much value and think fondly of that time, especially the group of people that I got a chance to meet and journey with. And as I'm continuing currently in further education and doing my doctorate in ministry, how am I approaching this a little bit differently? But we'll talk about that in a little bit. But for you guys, what has been your experiences?
I think for me, I also agree. Some of it was great. Some of it did not prepare me at all. And in my context, it's like, there's some churches that are more corporate minded and more, I think, they borrow from business practices at times and more than, I would say, spiritual practices or even discerning what that looks like to be church. It's always this kind of focus on governance and leadership and keeping things, clean or maybe not clean. I don't know. Some churches too. But I appreciate the theological growth, that theological teachings that I had from certain professors and helped shape my thinking. I personally have thought, in terms of higher education, cohort-based learning for me is better than elective-based learning. That it was just for me, just really, it's almost, you know, going with a group, walking with them and learning things, dialoguing throughout, you know, years of experience, that for me was very, very formative, because I both did my degree at Tyndale and a school in Jacksonville, Florida, Robert Weber Institute of Worship. So it was just really cool to see that. And then doing my doctorate of ministry, going through cohort learning there. I think just being together, learning is so much like the, just that, you know, methodology of learning together was better than just going to a class. So that for me was very formative, at least an instance.
Yeah, and I think the gift of, you know, at least when we were in Tyndale, you know, we weren't doing the cohort style of learning, but we kind of created our own cohort.
Yeah.
Right. And so there was like a group of us who started seminary together around the same time. We just kind of became friends, and you know, this conversation was birthed out of that.
To the joy and bane of some of the teachers, I think.
I'm sure. You know, as I hear from what you guys are saying, like, I think there is like a good, like, starting point, I think, in theological education. But I look back and it's like, it really is more of a teaser to thinking theologically, having some basis of working out things. And I think it's also things that you won't do. You know, and I joke because, like, I remember preaching class, and this is not a kick against preaching class. We all need to, you know, start from learning somewhere. But I actually, like, right after preaching class, I've never preached that way ever again.
Nice.
But then that's really just realizing that there are different ways of preaching, and it's not like, you know, just this one way. It may be effective in certain contexts, but it wasn't really working in my context. And so what I find is the learning happened so much more outside of the classroom because of the people you were with. And I know for some people who, you know, like, either not a part of a cohort or did not cultivate like a deep group of friendship, it was really hard.
Yeah.
Because like there's such a disengagement from what they're learning in the classroom to what they're experiencing. But when we had people around us, that was parsing it out. That was kind of thinking through some of the missional thoughts or the cultural relevancy or the biblical interpretations. Like, that was kind of what was bringing it alive.
I went to seminary 10 years after you guys.
It's quite different now.
It's very different.
Well, it's even more different post-pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would agree with everything you said. My version of the John nap was I would get up in the middle of class and then aimlessly wander the halls because I was restless.
This is a time of confession. It's good for the soul. It's good.
Oh, no, everybody knows this about me. Well, so I went back to seminary. I started in ministry first in the parachurch context. And then I had an African, specifically he was South Sudanese, student say to me, hey, how can you know you're not just telling me a white man's gospel?
Boom.
And I was like, I don't even know where my faith comes from, because I've been raised in a non-denominational quote-unquote context that was ahistorical. And if I heard anything about the history of the church, it was never in English. And so when I was growing up, half the time I couldn't even tell whether or not I was like actually understanding what was going on. And so I came to seminary with all these questions, and I actually started in missiology. So, and then quickly realized that wasn't where I was. It was helpful, but it wasn't what I was thinking through. And so I ended up in biblical studies and church in the city. And that program, unfortunately, no longer exists. But the church in the city program, which is cohort-based, was actually really formative for me. But so was like the aimless wandering and just reading all the time and talking with people and getting to know people's stories. I learned as much from my peers as I did my professors.
For me, school-wise, I didn't do that. And even like back in high school and university, and I feel it takes a certain person to want to go talk to your professors and, you know, build up from that. And if your higher education is set up within a certain framework, it's just kind of like you only learn the way that institution does it. You know, and what I find, it's, at least for me, MDiv, the Master of Divinity, was basically like a bachelor's.
It's a basic degree.
It's a bachelor's, so it's almost like, but what's so funny is that then we send people off to churches, and then people are like, yeah, I don't need any further education. I'm just going to just hunker down. Or at least back then, I guess. Now it's a little bit different. But I just noticed a lot of pastors would come in, just, you know, missionaries or whoever, like, coming out, and they'll go to the churches. Yeah, I'm done my MDiv. I'm done. I'm like, wait, what? It's like, you didn't even learn. We barely learned, just scratched the surface on things. And I guess that's just what you do. And then you finish that MDiv and you just do ministry. And I'm like, it's more than that.
It's unfortunate that, like, you know, the designation becomes kind of like almost like a prerequisite in some ways versus the depth of what that actually entails, right? Which is, you know, you're cultivating theology. You're developing, like, how does this actually engage with what it is? But then instead, it's like, you know, you look at some of the job descriptions, it's like, well, MDiv mandatory or preferred or whatever, mm-hmm. right? It just becomes like, you just got to get it versus like, well, does this actually imply anything?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you learn to school or do you learn in school? Right.
Mm.
And that's a big part of even our formation as people who have been raised in the Asian church.
Yeah, it's the professionalization of the clergy a bit, that you just, it's more of a status thing than necessarily learning. Like, it's almost like, yeah, if you learn something, that's great, but it's like, just, you got to get through it. But I do think it's changing. I do think some of the schools are, and maybe to their own kind of, it's almost like in distress, like they have to change because people are realizing it's not just, you know, go to seminary, get this degree, and then I'll be a great pastor or, you know, ministry worker or whatever in this way. And then even like, I don't even know what that means for, you know, ongoing to, you know, doctoral work. What would that look like to teach and how that's impacted, you know, the next generation of professors too.
But it's really interesting to kind of think about this idea because when a church or perhaps a ministry puts it on their job description that they require or prefer to have MDiv, what does that even mean? Because at least for me, I've never been asked about my MDiv. You know, no one's asked me about like, oh, like it mattered, kind of like, but I just had it, right? It just, and I've always wondered if people are just wanting to know that, oh, this person is mature or disciplined enough to get a Master's of Divinity, and it just shows that
and theologically trained.
But
right?
But even that, it depends which school you go to, right?
For sure.
Then it's like, well, if you went to a different school, you learn a different tradition or you're formed in a different tradition. And so having just the MDiv, what does that actually entail for a church? And at least for me, all the conversations that I've ever had in terms of any interviews and such like that has not been so much about the MDiv or my seminary experiences, but rather it's about like, oh, how do you fit into this culture? How would you be a pastor in this culture? How would you disciple? How would you lead in this culture and in this context? And that's the interesting thing. And it's like, sometimes I'm wondering, is there a disconnect there? And could you literally go online to an online seminary and just, you know, get a...
Phoenix.
Oh my gosh.
We love all our listeners from Phoenix. It's great. You know, like, what does it mean? So some people do that for like kind of marriage licenses, just like, oh, okay, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's interesting to see if how that actually matters to churches anymore or if it matters at all.
Well, and I would say that when students are selecting courses, they're often thinking about their pre-existing life patterns and how school could fit around it as opposed to what new thing can be changed, right? Like it's often easier to slot an online program, an asynchronous program, rather than being like, no, I'm going to dedicate X amount of time to go in and spend time with people. And so then you've got an entire school that's just disembodied and discorporated.
Yeah.
But I was going to say too that the other thing that I forgot to mention earlier was that being at Tyndale actually taught me to love ecumenism,
mm-hmm.
right? Like
mm-hmm.
around this table, even we're all from different traditions and mm-hmm. different backgrounds. But now I attend a Catholic school, right? So,
for the listeners who couldn't see that, Bernard was raising a yeah, yeah.
I grew up Catholic, so it's part of my heritage,
right? But there's like value in having been in a school like Tyndale that said very much like, these are all the different ways of following God. Mm-hmm. And here's how we follow God together.
Yeah. And I think I appreciated that in the teachers and also in, like, among my classmates, is learning from the different traditions and learning to both respect that and also perhaps even work towards that. You know, it's not just about your own tradition or denomination. But, you know, I think that was one of the benefits of going to a school like that.
You know, I find that all this kind of changes in higher education has affected even how church kind of teaches and does, quote unquote, educates their people. And like kind of Zena's saying, like, it's more about convenience now than about a robust kind of learning. And I don't know, you can argue about the maybe the colonialism of learning and how it's a certain way of doing it. I think we're going to get into that. But it's like, I remember when Victor Shepard, right, was forcing us to study this whole, you know, package of stuff that we had to study.
Systematic,
right? And we had to, like, really do the work. But then now it's like, yeah, just do a reflection paper. You know? How do you feel about this paper? You
know, reflection paper is the hardest for me, man.
Okay, fine. But it's just, I felt like so much more, like I had to be challenged to do that. But then I get it. It's not everybody's cup of tea. So it's kind of like a weird space in that people, like, I find the higher education, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but is trying to make things more digestible, easier, kind of convenient for people so that, you know, it doesn't scare them away, like the rigorousness of maybe that you might have to learn in that next degree that you want to do. But I don't know. But how that affects learning is that not everybody's built for, you know, higher education in that way. But yet you might have to do something to get the title, to get that position or blah, blah.
Well, but here's the thing, right? A lot of the seminaries, particular evangelical seminaries, do not have endowments. And so money is a real problem. Mm-hmm. And the things that are, the programs that are keeping seminaries afloat right now are chaplaincy and
counseling.
Yeah, spiritual formation.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it used to be that people would say to me, well, don't worry, you'll get a job because the last departments to be cut will be Bible and theology. We're actually seeing that to be the opposite now.
Really? Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Because there's just no money and there are no students taking Bible.
And I wonder what we lose in that. I kind of understand both sides of the equations, and they want people to come and, you know, they want to increase their class pool and enrollment. But there's the other side too. Is like, do we lose something when we aren't developing our ways of engaging with scriptures, being able to perhaps even think more critically? And the reflection's good. I think it's a part of it, but it's also like, have we lost something by, you know, making certain concessions or eliminating types of classes and just for the sake of, you know, bringing them in? And maybe there's the pressure that we don't always understand because the four of us aren't running seminaries, but we've been involved in kind of different capacities. I know Xenia was president of student council. I remember being on student council.
We're all overachievers.
Not me. I was a rebel.
Yeah, whatever. But you were on the worship team. Come on. You were on the worship team.
That was one of the best parts.
Yeah. That was a good part. Yeah. But I'm like, yeah, like, have we lost something? And what is that revealing?
But I wonder, you know, something that Shu and Zena, you guys both brought up, and, you know, you touched on the individualism aspect of kind of our culture, and then the kind of disembodiment of kind of how we're learning. And I also wonder, like, in these last 10 years or 20 years, like, the development of, you know, online stuff and just kind of taken away from the intentionality of kind of working out theology. It's more like, I'm just going to consume this theology and it's going to be my theology. I don't need a Bible class. See, I got all these people here. I got Tim Keller on demand. And so it's kind of like, I wonder if that also kind of impacts how people are thinking about, you know, Christian higher education and like Bible courses and stuff like that. And yet, you know, losing out on the kind of working out aspect that I think we all really appreciate it in our kind of higher education experience.
And it's a symptom, I would say, of a problem that we've already encountered for a couple of decades already, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the seminary really was created with young men in mind who had no attachments and could actually spend a cloistered amount of time together to be formed together. And what we're seeing, at least at Tyndale, is that the average age is the mid-40s for the student. And when I was at Tyndale, I had classmates who were well into their 80s and 90s. But for a lot of people who are transitioning or like who are thinking about a vocation as a pastor or in theological education or what be it, a lot of these people are coming in as a second career.
Mm-hmm.
And they come with families, they come with communities, they come with responsibilities and expectations. And so I think it really comes down to how the seminary has been shaped in the past. And what we're seeing right now is the flux, and people are choosing, obviously, online Tim Keller on demand to sort of remedy the flux in between as people are figuring out, well, what does seminary look like for our day and age?
What are the ways, both formal, informal, and even grassrootsy kind of ways that bring a more holistic formation for people? And that philosophy is like the higher education institution is not going to be able to do all of it. At the end of it, I think we all see that.
Yeah, I think we agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, but at times it's almost like we think if someone just goes through that, that, oh yeah, you'll be good. You'll be a good ministry worker. You'll be a good pastor or whatever. But what would that look like? Because, for example, Asian churches are still sending or trying to send people to, you know, the institution. It's like, oh, and then you pop out and you should be a good pastor or whatever.
Well, and I think what's really difficult is that there's also, it's this expectation that, you know, at the other end, there'll be a good ministry worker. But there's also a distrust of the formation that people are being sent into of the institution, right? Like there's this big, huge streak of anti-intellectualism in the Protestant tradition that I think is lessened to some degree in the Asian church because we value higher education.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's there. Like I hear it all the time. Like, oh, you know, you just spend all your time in your books. Like, what do you know about real life? Right? I mean, that's true these days. I do a lot of reading and don't talk to anybody, but...
But that begs the question, which actually prompted us to talk about this today. Is there a disconnect somewhere? Are we out of touch? Whether it be someone who has gone through seminary or Christian higher education, is there a sense that they are out of touch of what's happening in the world and how to discern that? And we have a quote from one of our buddies, David Fitch. Shout out. But he posted this, and he said that when the academy, talking about specifically theological academy, gets detached from the day-to-day life of the church, it ends up talking to itself and has little idea how its theology impacts the local church. When the local church gets detached from theological academy, it ends up theologizing in its own bubble and has little of the long and wide movement of God in history which it is invited into. And it's a fascinating sense because he's kind of highlighting, is there a disconnect that's happening on both ends from Christian higher education to what's happening in local churches? Maybe we've experienced some of that in our own experience, like in terms of our own education, but also the other way around too. Is there a disconnect from that end? So when you guys read this quote, because this only came out a couple of days ago, what was your initial reaction? What was your thought?
I think I laughed because I was thinking about, is this particularly a white or a white adjacent phenomenon?
Yes. Unpack that. We got to talk about that.
Because I look at the Black church and I think about all my friends who are doing their PhDs, but also deeply involved in their local church, and their theology arises from their community. And it impacts their community. I mean, to what degree? Like, there's always going to be... The church, I mean, traditionally, was 20 years behind the academy. And so I will often, when I'm at churches and talking about things, I will be talking about things in my field that are like 20 years ago, which really does annoy me because that's like the height of whiteness. But in some ways, like when we think about the Asian church sending their young Asian folk into the institution, which is white dominant, well, do you expect that they will stay the same? Like, will they be at all co-opted by whiteness and trained and formed in certain ways to achieve certain goals? And then to what degree has that the church been already impacted by whiteness in its formation out of missionary movements and et cetera? And so, like, there are all these dialogical movements of, like, I don't think it's as clear cut as, like, well, you know, if only the academy talked to the church. Well, we try all the time, but there are all these different cultural dynamics that just aren't, you know, brought into play.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the, like, I don't know how to handle the demands of doing a dissertation while pastoring. And some people can do it, but as a woman, like, there are just so many different dynamics. Then most of the people that I've seen who've done it well are men. And so as a woman who's trying to do all these things, I'm like, oh, I don't pastor the way men do, which means that, like, my relational sort of capacity is messier in some ways. And the emotional workload is heavier in some ways. And women tend to lead in more collaborative ways, which means that there's more people time, which then intrudes on time that I'm writing my dissertation. And so there are all these things where I'm like, well, this is a nice thought, but, like, how much of this is, like, very male focused and very much, like, not consistent with how we think about church as Asian people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also aspirational, right? Like, if a church is healthy and the academy is healthy, then there are health, like, presumably something healthy will emerge.
But I think it pushes even more, right? It isn't just a dialogue between academy and the, you know, what is known as assembly, right? The church. I think there's more messier conversations than just as long as the two gets together, right? Like, it's not a simple, like, oh, you just come together and talk. And, you know, as someone who's putting, like, part of a team that's putting this conference together in May, which is drawing the academy with the churches, with the parachurch and the workplace folks, like, even that is, like, insufficient to, you know, fully grasp, you know, on the ground stuff. You know, and when I read that too, I was like, well, where's the actual, like, neighborhood engagement aspect of this conversation? It's a day-to-day life of the church that assumes the church is actually engaged with your community, with your missional spaces.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, then that's also the element. Because then you would just create another bubble between the academy, like the theological meandering or wrestling with, you know, kind of your day-to-day church structure stuff. But it has no missional, you know, formation at all. So I think, like, I think this is a good start to kind of wrestle with these dynamics, but I think it's way messier.
Yeah, like, I wonder if, you know, like, just thinking about if you just said church or parish instead of church or something like that, trying to think through more of a wider net than just a typical evangelical church where you just think of a building or just a certain group of people. But that if there is a bigger engagement, then at least there's a bit more dialogue and on, because let's just face it, like, assignments that you get from, you know, seminary or whatever, to engage the neighborhoods or to engage kind of practically, it's just, yeah, go do this assignment and then come back and do a reflection, you know, like, and it's, that's good, but it's, there's more that needs to be immersed into if you're really going to do it. And like Zena's saying, there's, like, depending where you are, what's going on, your timing may not fit within all that. So it's just that some people, and that's why I think it's going to be, maybe what you're saying, it's like, it's just getting more and more messier because we're trying to engage these different institutions, different ways of learning. It requires more mentorship and on the ground kind of engagement to really be working out what that theological kind of learning you were, like, processing. And then you actually go through it in real life and realize, wait, is this really what the Bible's saying, what I'm, you know, my theology is actually informing and how I practice? And you don't have space to, you need space to question those things, work it out with other people, and then you can actually start developing more and growing and evolving a bit more in your understanding. But at times we're just like, you know, that's, how can we make it all work within this conference or within this this class or this degree? And I'm like, you know?
Well, but that's the white man's narrative, right? Like, that we gain mastery of something, right? Like, there's
a master of divinity.
Right. And so, like, but that's a fallacy. It's idolatry to think that we will ever master anything.
I guess it depends how we define the word, right? I think that there's part of it where it's like a master in terms of either able to possess or control or to be authoritative on something versus, like, I don't know, what if we define master by being, like, growing in humility and being able to be more formed in learning from each other and discerning together.
We're going to master humility.
That should be the new degree. Tyndale, are you listening? The master of humility.
Okay, but to be fair to Tyndale, this is not a knock on Tyndale.
No. We love Tyndale. Yeah, we love Tyndale. We're indebted to Tyndale.
But I learned, because I was coming in with ministry experience, and it was paired with theoretical frameworks, that was the most helpful for me.
Right.
But I also came with an arts degree as my first degree. And that makes a difference. I remembered once I blundered into a professor's office for our weekly chat. This is one of the professors who would, like, you go in with a question and then you wouldn't get an answer. You'd come out with like 15 other questions. But I'm
guessing it's also a two-hour conversation too. Oh,
2.5, maybe 3. I think I said to him, how do I preach to a bunch of people who do not understand beauty? Because they've been formed to pursue certain vocations as part of the model minority myth so that they can be successful and love their families and raise their families into the upper middle class. And he said, that's the wrong question. And then he refused to tell me what the right question was. But I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, well, everybody has the capacity for beauty because we were made in the image of God. So then what does beauty actually look like? Mm-hmm. And that actually led me to my dissertation because of trauma, because I realized that our capacity for beauty and our capacity to search for beauty is diminished by trauma. For me, anyway, you shouldn't do a dissertation or you shouldn't do a doctorate unless you have a burning question that you can't get rid of because it's a painful and arduous journey. And it often does not lead to like clear career goals. But the other aspect of that is that like seminary was so formational for me because I had professors who were willing to give me and my culture time and space to process. Mm-hmm. And challenged me in my thinking, being like, well, okay, if you want to understand how to actually read writers from the global, like from the majority world, then you actually have to understand what they're responding to. And so I learned all the white theology so that I could read all the responses to white theology. But I don't know that if that's the norm for a lot of people who go to seminary.
Right.
Because a lot of time it's like the first step into thinking theologically, thinking philosophically.
I wonder if there's something that is at play, at least undergirding a lot of our conversation, is that how much of it is the onus of the person going into seminary or the community that is formed in seminary versus the assumptions or expectations of those institutions, whether it's Christian higher education or even the local church. And I wonder if sometimes we kind of blur the lines too much and expect too much from all these different things when they're not able to be able to meet all those specific desires and hopes. And maybe that's partly it's making us stumble over our feet, because like at least I'm hearing from this conversation today that if you go in to Christian higher education, or even if you go into the local church and you're wanting to be formed and you're really reflective and you're really learning to unpack things and reconstruct things, that you're going to be, you know, you're going to get the most out of those experiences of either being in the local church or being in Christian higher education. But if you're not going in for those purposes, then you won't get it. And I don't know if it's worth, I don't know if it's a proper assumption to think that like, okay, if we go to seminary or Christian higher education, that by the end of it, we're going to be like this person. Because I just wonder if it's going to be, you know, if that's the right expectation to have.
Yeah, I think you got to go in just thinking that this is like, I think what we said in the beginning, this is the first stop. This is the first leg of the journey. And there's going to be more to learn after this and more God's going to show. You know, and more questions that will arise. Because when you do theology, you should be questioning things.
They should just rename it to Master of Questions. I'm the Riddler. Edward Nygma.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
But yeah. Here's the thing, right? Like, I mean, anybody who's finished a doctorate will tell you this, that when you come to the end of your journey, you're like, what do I even know?
Yeah. I'm more messed up than I was before.
Right. Because like for me, I will know a very niche topic, very in depth, but that no one else probably wants to think about. But then there's like, but I'm also engaged in the greater academy and in the church. And then you realize like there's just so much you don't know. But even in the field, the more you, like, okay, look, if you look at the biblical texts, what do you do with scribal errors? Right? Like, what do you do when the Septuagint says this thing, but the Masoretic text says this other thing? Those are real questions. And those are questions that I don't feel like I will ever be able to answer until kingdom comes and Jesus can answer him or these questions for himself. But it's like this, right? Like when we come in, I think it's what I was saying earlier and what you were alluding to. It's that, and what you were saying, John, right? Like that when we go into seminary, are we hoping to be formed and shaped for the purposes of God's kingdom? Or are we just, you know, taking a check mark?
Mm-hmm.
There's your Asian thing.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate. And I think it is part of, a friend of mine calls it schoolvation. Like salvation, but schoolvation.
Oh.
And so it's like, how do we unlearn that in our own formation as Asian Christians?
And there's something that you also alluded to, your own journey that was kind of key is your arts degree, right? And I remember when I was, you know, sensing God's calling into some sort of ministry, vocational, whatnot, my pastor was like, just quit your degree and go into Bible college. And then I was like, no, like, I like what I'm studying. And that's not like, you know, a kick on anyone, but it's just like, I was thankful that I actually finished my degree because so much of what I've learned in the arts has helped me wrestle and unlock a lot of the questions that I have even now. And so I think, like, you know, when you talk about, you know, like readying or like the checklist question, I think that's also an onus, like, on kind of how we institutionalize education from our local churches and institutions, because I think there is so much of what you just described that kind of, what was that term again you called it?
School evasion.
Almost sounds like school evasions.
You heard it here first, folks. Well, as we wrap up the conversation today, and maybe this will bring it full circle back to our initial question about, you know, kind of reflecting on Christian higher education and the local church and the connections between the two. Is there any final thoughts that you guys have? I'm even thinking about even our conversation today and even wondering if the gap is even widening between the local church and academy. And
Depends on where.
And who. I totally agree, Xenia. It's interesting. And I think part of it is thinking too about like looking at the practices of the local church that I'm a part of and what does it mean for them to kind of, like, is there even a desire among people to really want to learn more and to dive deeper into these areas? And for the select people who do, you know, what's their approach? Why do they want to do it? Why do they want to be able to, in one way, disseminate it to others through classes or whatever? But the response also isn't there, that people aren't just going to jump into the classes and just be like, oh, I really want to learn, you know, systematic theology. Or I love what you're talking about, even talking about making that connection between how trauma affects our ability to see and experience beauty. And I think that's amazing. Like that's something that we need to talk about. But do we even come across people in our lives that are desiring to unpack that and wanting to go deeper? I don't know. But I think these are continuing questions, at least to kind of reflect on. But for you guys, any final thoughts in terms of thinking about the conversation today?
Maybe just, you know, following up what we talked about, trauma and beauty, and maybe also kind of our systems of Western Christianity, where it's all about, you know, we joked about like the word master, right? But really, in the Western church has been shaping our imagination to master these things. Whereas, like, I think in the Eastern church, there's a little bit more of the ability to hold mystery. And when we demystify everything, I think that's kind of why we can't embrace beauty as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we can't just, you know, be free to be sitting in the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we're looking for the answers. And when seminary becomes so much about finding the answers, or at least the churches or wherever, why you need this institution is about finding the answers we lose sight of the beauty of questions, where I think God will continually lead us in those spaces.
Yeah, like, I don't want to throw certain traditions or whatever under the bus, but it was, when you were talking about that, that for me is why some certain groups are still looking for that in their learning, that they would just tell me the truth, tell me the truths of this theologian that said this, and this is the systematic truth, and I'll believe that, and I'll tell everyone else, this is how you do ministry, this is what the gospel is, this is what the kingdom is in this particular stream. But what I appreciate about Tyndale and I appreciate about other schools that I've been a part of is that it gave me a wider, and even actually my undergrad too, I guess it's arts, all right? Sociology gave me a wider lens to think through things and question and even doubt certain teachings that were like, oh, that must have been the truth. And actually, I talked to some people, they go, you can't doubt. That's sin. That's sinful. And I was like, what?
Tell that to Jeremiah.
And yeah, and numerous some of Jesus' disciples. But yeah, I find people go to seminary or higher education, in Christian higher education, to just, as long as I'm solid in this way, then I'll really know the truth and I don't have to think anymore. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wait, really?
Yeah. Well, knowledge isn't salvation.
That's like a printable on a t-shirt.
But yeah, but I just feel like one of the disciplining things about doing my doctorate has been learning that it is acceptable to worship with my life's work, right? Like, sure. With the work of, no, I guess literally my hands, because I'm typing on a keyboard. But that you know, the way of worship, the way of formation and discipleship for me in this season has been actually sitting down with my doctoral work and being like, okay, Jesus, what are you teaching me through this? Mm-hmm. And that is acceptable and hopefully smells lovely before the Lord.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, just to quickly wrap this up, I think of the Ascension and how some of the disciples were there and they worshiped, some doubted. But it's like, we can either interpret that as, oh, that's bad, or we can interpret that as, that's real life and maybe that's pleasing to God, that we can worship and we can still doubt at the same time. And that says something for us in terms of Christian higher education and also the local church. That's going to be it for our conversation today. Lots of big questions in regards to Christian higher education. What has been your experiences, or what's your perspective on seminaries and continuing education that continues to form us? We'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to us by email at contact.campodcast@gmail.com. That's contact.campodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can also reach us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you haven't done so already, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. That helps us to get this conversation out there. Also, share it with others who you might think might benefit from it. As always, you've been listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast, and we hope you'll join us on this journey. See you next time.